Welcome to Energy Radio. On this episode, we are live on location, which is great. With the chance to come out and be at a site at a project that we're going to talk about. And I'm here with somebody I've got to know well and become friends with over the years. And very happy to have Doran Marion on the show today from what I call International Wax, but I think it's the International Group.
Right? Yes.
So, Doran, welcome. Would love you to kind of introduce yourself to the listeners, and then we'll have a chat.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt, for the invitation. I'm very glad that you guys are here on site for this podcast. Like you said, Doran Marion, I've been with the International Group, International Waxes, like you said, for more than 21 years by now. I'm currently the manager of energy engineering and maintenance, so I'm supervising the powerhouse maintenance department and the engineering group. I've been in this position kind of since we finished the cogen project in 2019. Prior to that, I had various roles, starting from a refinery analyst in the beginning, re-redacted the operations manual for refinery, and then I had a short period as maintenance supervisor. I helped plant engineer for a while, and then I got this to this position right now.
Cool. Excellent. Before we get into the project, maybe give us an explanation of like the facility that we're in right now. What is it? What do you do here? That kind of stuff.
The International Group is a privately owned Canadian company. It's the biggest independent wax producer in North America. Mm. It's been functioning on this location roughly since 1945.
Wow.
Business started with a small garage. The grandfather of the present owner started the business. The business was handed over generation to generation, so it's the third generation of owners. The business has been expanded over the years from a Canadian-owned business to an international company. We have acquired a few companies, two refineries in U.S. We have a few blending facilities also in various locations in U.S. And basically, we are de-oiling the wax in our processes. We're getting the raw materials from big oil refineries, and some of it, probably a good chunk of it, from our sister plants from U.S.
Okay.
And we are de-oiling that mixture that we call it slack wax.
So it's a product that comes out of...
Product that comes out of the bottom of the towers in big oil refineries, and de-oiling, deodorizing, decolorizing, and then most of it is shipped bulk by road or by rail, and we have a small department for solids where we make slabs or granules or chiclets. And we sell that back to our customers, which are making the final product. Mm. So you're not going to see a final product from us,
right,
but it's that raw material for the uses of the waxes are industry-wide, starting from candle business. Packaging is a huge customer of ours. Tire industry, chemical, we're getting into food grade waxes, personal care, pharmaceutical, fire logs, you name it.
Wow.
We also have a business in US for bee waxes, so we kind of close the loop on. We have veggie waxes. All our waxes are biodegradable, so which is a plus for our customers, knowing that. And I believe we have over 1,000 codes for finished waxes that we can ship to our customers. And we proud ourselves with the fact that we can ship one pail or 100 rail cars.
Okay.
So we're very, very flexible when it comes to the magnitude of the order.
Right.
As opposite to the big oil refineries, who they do have businesses similar to ours, but they only have a few wax grades and the ship in bulk. So
got it.
We have an R&D lab on site, which can come up with any formulation within 48 hours to a customer's needs. And we can put that in production immediately and ship that to the customer.
Wow, very cool.
As it is a wax business, we are very energy intensive, from hydro to thermal energy to utilities bought to sustain the production process, water, nitrogen,
right,
propane, all that stuff. So it's a big challenge controlling the cost and reducing the consumption of all those utilities and energies.
Yeah, which is what we're going to talk about a lot today. But I think it's, for our listeners, it's important. I'll try to paint the picture of this particular facility is in Toronto. And if you could go outside where we are right now, it's completely surrounded by a residential neighborhood.
Yes.
And it's been that way for a while, right? And it's just getting more and more populated, right?
In the beginning, there was farmland all around the plant, but then they started to build residential, and we had to act to reduce the noise to the neighborhood. We're in compliance with all the bylaws and the laws, provincial, local, provincial, federal, as far as emissions, air and noise, and everything we do, it complies with all the regulations in place, exactly for the same reason.
Yeah, I remember that when we were talking about the project in those early days, that was from a noise and even just an optics perspective, with especially the big condos that are going up to the north,
yes,
right? Like that was always a big focus, was how do we do this project without, you know, because you guys are great, you know, corporate citizens in the area, and how do we, you know, preserve that and ideally make
that,
it better,
yes,
you know, throughout the project. So maybe start the story kind of at what, from my understanding, was at least one of the main kind of impetuses for this project. Like, we met you, but years ago, but prior to that, you had had a major event here that kind of kickstarted the whole cogen journey. If, you know, at the risk of bringing up a painful memory, can we ask you to start there and then paint the picture?
That was the dreaded February 15, 2015, when a chain of unfortunate events conducted to a plant shutdown and a total freeze-up of the plant. It was a combination of a power failure, a curtailment process in progress from Enbridge.
Mm.
We are an interruptible customer for our boiler for steam production, and that means that in winter time, when the pressure in the system drops, Enbridge has the option to call us and ask us to get off the gas network. Our boilers, the three traditional boilers that we had in plant up until then, they were dual fuel, so we can burn in our boilers the oil that we're separating in the refining process, we call the foot oil.
Right.
So the burners are equipped with the oil burners also in the boilers. And because of the power failure and all that, we lost the steam production. Our oil has some content of wax still left in there, so it froze up, and we couldn't produce any steam to maintain the piping nice and hot. So we froze up the plant, and it came with a very expensive bill. At that time, to repair, to thaw the process, and it took us, I remember, almost a week to start up the refinery. That was the main priority, to start the refinery and then to start the other parts of the plant. So that was the moment when we decided that we need to go to a backup system, which it was played with. The idea of a cogen was on the table probably about two or three times in my time at IGI. Until
even prior to that?
Prior to that, yes.
Okay, yeah.
But it was a Toronto Hydro-driven project for 20 megawatt unit to to be dispatched when prices are right and the loads are needed in the system. So it wasn't with the direct benefit to IGI, but to the local utility company with some benefits. But the project never came to fruition. So after the February 15, 2015, we decided that we need to start looking very seriously for a cogen so we can have a redundant power right. system. And it's a long story how, like you said, before we met you, we started to discuss with other engineering companies for a different type of cogen than what we are running right now. But the waste heat wasn't enough for our process. And luckily, I met CM Engineering to one of these energy and utilities shows, if you remember. And I think I told you, I think I met you at that time, and I told you that we're working on a cogen and with an internal combustion engine, but we're not sold completely on the solution. So you mentioned the gas turbines, and I said, okay, let's look at that and see. And after that, it was just, I'm going to call it now a breeze from that point on, because it was very clear that the gas turbine and the waste heat boiler attached to the turbine is the way to go. And this way we would drive all the savings with this project. We were lucky enough there was the incentive program on the table from the government, administered by the local utility company, which helped a lot on the decision-making process. So I think it was by 2016, end of 2016, we had the new engineering study done with the gas turbine, and we had to go again to the owners of the companies saying that we don't want to spend $5.7 million, we want to spend double on a gas turbine, and these are benefits and savings and payback. So it was an easy approval process at that time.
Yeah.
And then everything started.
I remember meeting you. I don't think I was the first person to meet you. But then I think you met Ed from our team, and then anyways we met pretty quickly, and you told me about the internal combustion engine, and then you told me about your heat load, your steam load. Right away I'm like, no, this is a gas turbine project. But then we went, you guys, you know, you wanted to do your due diligence, so remember we went on that road trip and went to a bunch of different sites. And Richard came with us too, and we saw both kind of in one day. And I think that was a good experience too for you guys to see.
It was very clear that the gas turbine is the way to go on this.
Tell us about what you have. So tell us now about, we'll talk about kind of some of the key aspects of the project, but what's here today? Like, what's the finished project?
The finished project is Centaur 40 gas turbine built by Solar Turbines in San Diego. With a 3.5 megawatt engine with a 3.8 megawatt generator attached to the turbine, a waste heat boiler that has for our plant the electricity load gives us about 15 to 16,000 pounds per hour free steam, unfired steam, and we have two duct burners installed to supplement that steam load to about 90,000 pounds, which is our peak load on winter time. With that, we had to install a gas compressor. It is a Wilter screw compressor to boost the 60 PSI natural gas from the grid from Enbridge to 250 to feed the turbine. And this way, the old boilers, they became backups. So the cogen is providing the electricity in the plant. We have a minimum 200 kilowatt draw from the grid by contract with Toronto Hydro. So when we're connected to the grid to have a backup, to have redundant power feed, we have to take 200 kilowatt from there. and all the protection and control that was prescribed by CM Engineering and approved by Toronto Hydro is in place to prevent the export of power to the grid. Yeah, that was one of the first discussions with Toronto Hydro, that they don't need any more generators on the grid. So, yeah.
Although that may be changing, but that's a different discussion for another
day. We complied with that request.
And there was a big, you know, your switchgear, your front, your kind of service entrance changed dramatically too, right?
Yes, because before the cogen, we had two separate feeds coming into the plant, into step-down transformers. One was above ground and one was underground. With the new switchgear that was purchased and installed with the cogen project, we combined those two into one single feed into the plant, and we had to buy one of the...
yeah, I remember that.
the story with the Toronto Hydro transformer that we had to buy, because now that transformer was inside of our distribution system. And that's a whole podcast altogether. If you want to talk about that.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Eventually, we got it, so it's still running. It's being maintained, and we have a spare that would feed both step-down transformers. So we're ready for that fully redundant on power.
So right now, you meet all of your electrical loads and all of your steam loads from the cogen. Is that right?
Yes. In wintertime, we have to supplement with our traditional boiler.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're getting close to the full load of the waste heat boiler, and we need a bit of reserve on boiler four. But since then, we decommissioned two of the old boilers. We have only two left, which supplement each other to 100,000 pounds per hour.
Okay.
And that's the backup of the waste heat boiler.
Okay.
The load, the electrical load, yes, we have plenty until right about September, when it's very hot and humid, and the refrigeration system in refinery works really hard. So we reached the turbine's performance.
Do?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So that's why we stay connected to the grid to have that backup in place. Yes.
Okay.
We picked a 2.9, and in those hot, humid days, of course, the efficiency of the turbine drops like a rock, and it was only about 2.8. So we tripped the turbine.
Really?
The first year. So
okay.
We put in place procedures, and we're watching the turbine performance in those hot, humid days, and make sure that we're connected to the grid to have the necessary spare on the, electrical load.
You connect to the grid then, but you can also island from the grid.
Yes. The idea on the cogen was to have fully redundancy and dual feed, and the option in between all of them. So we can run all on the grid, all on the cogen, on island mode, like you said, or we can prescribe the import level that we need to get from the grid and supplement with the gas turbine to the plant load, yes.
Cool. Yeah, and it, you know, my recollection of the project, like, if anybody was able to come here and see the site before and after, unless you knew what to look for, you'd be hard pressed to find, you know, where, like, it's by no means a greenfield. And that was some of the challenges, both in design, but especially in construction, was where, you know, there was really only one place on the property that this fit being
kind of,
yeah. And then actually, you know, designing a building that fit, and then actually building it. I don't know if you want to talk about some of those challenges of just the being a brownfield and an operating plant at the same time.
Yeah, so going back to what you said before, that in the old times, the plant was surrounded by farmland, and then starting to build everything around. Real estate is at the high price for us. So in order to make the floor room for the cogen, we had to excavate, I think we hauled about 250 dump trucks from used to be a dirt berm around two of our oil tanks, and we had to build a retaining wall to gain the floor space, and then we leveled off, had to relocate some tanks, the oil and grease tanks that we had to relocate, and basically the entire project was a custom job, custom job.
Yeah.
If you remember when we're working on the building, we said, well, let's cut this corner, let's fit this in here, let's do this. So everything is as we did at that point. So there was a lot of work pre-cogen, just to make the room, the floor space, relocate the existing equipment that was functioning on that site, and then build a building around the two big pieces of equipment.
Right.
Because that was a complete other challenge. The location on the north side of the plant is at a lower elevation than the street in the front. So we had to drive the boiler and the gas turbine package with the SMTPs that you only see in Discovery Channel, I like to say.
We should get that video footage if off of you if we can, because some of that video you have of the, because it was, you know, there was a couple, I remember there was a couple utility lines that it was unavoidable, you had to dislocate, but other than that, the plant continued to operate.
Yes.
And it was one of those things where going over it was way too expensive,
was too expensive, and there was requiring shut down the street here in the front about a week, and the crane guy says, no, we're not going to bring that crane, we'll find another way, and boy, am I glad that they did. That was quite the experience, moving the two loads. So once we had them in place, the boiler and the gas turbine, we started basically to build around them the whole building, and it was a challenge in itself to build a building around the two pieces of equipment in place, and especially that you have multiple trades on site, and you know the value of this piece of equipment and this, and the guys working around, and don't touch that, make sure you don't drop, you don't. So we had to be very diligent during construction.
Yeah, you were, you mentioned your titles earlier, but you were also construction manager, really. You know, every day you were out there for a big portion of your day, right?
Yeah. This is because of the fact that we, if you remember in the beginning, we looked at the secondhand gas turbine.
Right, yes,
to try to control the cost from going from a combustion engine to a turbine. And then we were lucky enough that somehow Solar Turbines find out that we're looking for turbines, and they knocked on our doors. And we're lucky enough that we got a brand new turbine for the cost of a used turbine.
And you didn't have to explain that you're buying a Rolls Royce for your company.
And that was a huge achievement for us.
Yeah.
The efficiency of the entire project went up just by doing that. So
I remember,
that was a really nice thing to happen at that point, yes.
And then, so when did, construction and commissioning had their normal kind of challenges, but when did it go into full operation, do you remember?
Construction started on first working day of 2018. January 3rd.
Okay.
We broke ground.
That's the best time to construct in Canada, right?
Yeah, winter. To pour foundations and all that. Yeah. And we finished by December 2018. So it was one full year construction.
Yeah.
And coming January 2019, we started testing and commissioning on the gas turbine. And then we had some challenges on synchronization with the grid.
Oh yeah, right.
The ferro-resonance process that was happening, and we're lucky enough that we had a really good electrical engineer from CM that took that to heart, and he spent a lot of time troubleshooting the ferro-resonance that was happening, and he came up with a solution, and we were able to pass that milestone. So by, I think it was by July 2019,
okay,
everything was ready to run, but because it was such a complex project and brand new plant for us, we started to run only on day shift.
Oh, yeah.
And right. Get the operators used to. We had to go do training in San Diego with solar turbines. Then we brought trainers from Solar Turbines on site for the guys working shifts, so to get them
right.
Accustomed to the new piece of equipment. And we started to run the cogen only on days. And we did that for about 2 months. And when we were comfortable enough with this, we went to Toronto Hydro and said, we need to start working on the official in-service date. There was an MVP coming from Toronto Hydro to get all the information for the project, the equipment. We had to provide some data that was collected already on the PLC, on our price servers, from that commissioning time to prove that the efficiency of the project and the thermal efficiency and all that, it was as we said it was going to be. So by, I think it was November 12, 2019, it was the official in-service date.
Okay.
So from that point on, we ran 24/7.
So you're just past the 4 year mark.
We are past
almost 4.5 now.
4.5, yes.
Wow. Yeah, it always struck me that you talked about sending your guys for training and then bringing trainers. Like, the engagement of your team was pretty important all along, I think, right?
Yes, yeah. And we knew that we have to engage them, being a new piece of equipment and kind of in the state-of-the-art electricity generation with the waste heat boiler attached, including all the balance of plant equipment, and that was done with the cogen. We had to bring them on and we had to show them that this is state-of-the-art facility and we need a bit of extra knowledge to operate this. And I think that paid off.
Were you concerned that they would not kind of, they wouldn't kind of see it for what it was and maybe wouldn't treat it with the proper kind of respect? Or like, what were you trying to get there?
That was one of the concerns, because you're bringing steam makers into electricity generation. That doesn't fall under the TSSA jurisdiction, but because you have the waste heat boiler attached to the gas turbine, automatically had to be under TSSA jurisdiction and the jurisdiction of the chief engineer that we have on site, first class TSSA engineer.
Yeah.
So we wanted to show them that the money we spent and the technology that we brought in the plant is going to pay off, and it's going to be a huge step forward for the plant, and including for them, because now they work on upgraded equipment, new electricity generation equipment that not too many people in GTA can say that they do that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing, we do get power engineering students for co-ops here.
Oh yeah.
At least twice a year. Okay. We have power engineers. We give them the chance to get their steam time for fourth class. And they're all, the one question that I ask them after 2 weeks, I say, tell me what you like the most in here. And every time the answer is the cogeneration projects. We only seen that in on books. And,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
okay.
He says we never, so having an experience, hands-on experience on a cogen system, I think gives them that
that's awesome.
Sharp edge when they go back to school.
Yeah.
And they, so.
And the guy's got a new control room, right? Like right near there, and that must have helped.
Yeah, the control room was a huge upgrade from what was there before. The control room, the office for the chief engineer.
Oh yeah, right.
And the electrical room that was part of the building in the cogen. That was a huge upgrade. The guys were very happy to move into that new control room.
Yeah, yeah. And so now, you've got kind of 4.5 years of operating history. I mean, are there certain things you're tracking? Are there certain things like I know you're a big kind of metrics numbers guy. I mean, how do you look at the project relative to, you know, you were doing this before, you invest all this money, you know, are you hitting your numbers? Are you exceeding your numbers? What are the numbers you're looking at?
So the main driver all these years was to maximize the savings.
Yeah.
Knowing the numbers behind the project, I pushed all the time to keep the plant running on island mode. In the, I think it was year 2 and 3, we were able to do that with no issues. Equipment was brand new and we didn't have many issues. In the 4th year, we started to have some issues with some equipment.
Yeah.
That was fixed right away, but it was minor shutdowns here and there that took time away from electricity. I'm tracking electricity generation, of course, the cost, the unloaded cost of electricity generated on site. Now I'm still referring to the price of electricity that was in the DES before the cogen, which was one of the highest ever in North America at that time, and that's why the project made so much so much sense. And I think we're still hitting those numbers.
Okay.
Maybe we added like half a year to the payback period, overall the project is still performing as designed.
I mean, obviously on the natural gas side, the savings are probably, how do they compare on the natural gas, on the steam side?
On the steam side, producing steam on the Herzig, on the waste heat generator, it's happening at 92% efficiency compared to 81 for the traditional boilers.
Right, okay.
So we're pushing everything that we can on the plus. Like I said, the unfired steam portion of the of the project, it's almost the size of one of the small traditional boilers. So I'm getting that free of charge.
Right, right.
Right off the bat. So the savings are...
So in terms of the owner saying, I invested all this money, am I getting a return? Kind of the data is saying that, maybe it's a little bit longer than anticipated, but it's, for the most part, is giving them the returns that they were looking for.
Absolutely. The other thing that was added since we commissioned the project was the carbon tax, which...
I've heard about that,
hurts the payback, but there's another aspect that... we talk about, and that's the reliability,
right?
And the energetic safety of the plant, because before the cogen, we are subject to a lot of trips and brownouts from the grid, and that caused production to go down at least 2 hours each time that that happens. So any storm, any weather event, any switching in their transformer station would have follow-ups on our plant with a shutdown. So that's not something that we quantified but we don't have those anymore. So
And is that because you're predominantly islanded from the grid? Is that why? Or?
One, because of that, but if anything happens on the grid, the breaker will open and we stay on island mode, and our plant is protected.
Yeah.
We had one incident, a really bad storm that the overvoltage travels so fast through the breaker that tripped the gas compressor. And then everything shut down from there. But we're very reliable in generating.
Wow.
There was at least 3 times I can think of when the entire neighborhood was dark and we're bright and and running because cogen.
That's so cool.
Another thing that we also did since then, if you remember when we designed the cogen, we left provisions in the field for a blackout generator connection box.
Yeah, right.
We bought that generator and installed the generator because during a power outage, an extended power outage, we were saying we're going to rent a generator, but when everybody wants a generator,
right.
How do you get that generator right. on site quick enough to? So we purchased and installed that Black Start, and now it's fully hardwired.
Right.
And we're also using that on our regular shutdowns to energize the main building, so we don't shut down the main building.
Okay.
Because that generator is just idling, it's sitting there.
Right.
So during our shutdowns, we have a manual switch for main office, and we keep those guys in the office. And
at the office. Okay, cool. Okay.
Right now we're working to power up this side of the plant from the same one for shutdown purposes. So it's a
slick
triple.
Yeah,
triple
that's cool.
Payback.
That's
on
awesome. That's
on
cool.
That generator,
that's
yes.
Was there any other kind of, you talked about the power quality and interruptions. Did any other kind of unexpected outcomes that came out of the cogen project itself?
Unexpected?
Yeah.
No. I'm happy to say that it's performing as designed. So we didn't have any major. We did replace the engine. I told you before the podcast.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Last year in October,
which was kind of on schedule for what they were
planned. Planned schedule. We're close to 36,000 hours.
Runtime.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
And we signed a long-term maintenance agreement with solar turbines from the get-go.
Yeah.
And that includes an engine overhaul for the duration of the contract for 5 years. With the possibility of extending to another 5 after that.
Right, okay.
So we took full advantage of that, and we got the engine replaced in, I think it was 8 days.
Wow.
They came on site, shipped the engine to site, pulled the old one out, installed a new one, did all the tests, and we're running since then with no issues on the gas turbine.
That's amazing. And did you see an increase in the efficiency with the new one? Like had it been tapering off and then it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just no. It's pretty steady all the way across.
Steady.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, when we visited the DeSoto facility in Texas from solar turbines, they were talking very high about the cleanliness of our engine and the gearbox.
Right. So, right. Wow.
They showed us actually samples from other engines.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
And they looked so it's not just us,
right?
Yeah. They weren't saying that to everyone, but I believe a good maintenance keeps the equipment running as designed and efficient as you can. So the air filters for combustion, with the HEPA option that we installed. The gas compressor is in a good location, and it's so quiet that even today I'm still amazed how quiet that gas compressor is. The gearbox, the oil polished as per solar turbine specifications in the beginning. So, and all the maintenance done on time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to have any issues with
that's
that.
That's awesome. Yes. Yeah. So if you went back in time to 2014, 2015, and could do it over again. Is there anything you'd do, differently? If you had a chance to do it over again, would you do anything differently?
Differently, no, but probably there would be a few lessons that I learned for another
big project.
Construction like this, but no.
What would those lessons be then for somebody who might be doing a project like this,
One would be, and I think we spoke about this in the past, the importance of the FEED study.
Yeah, agreed.
The more you do in the beginning, the better you're going to be when you go to construction and commissioning.
Yeah.
Budgeting also is a huge deal because... if you don't do your budgets, you're going to be out of...
And those two things go hand in hand, right?
And,
like the more you could progress the design, the better you're going to have for a capital budget. Right?
Yes, And for the person out there looking to construct something like this, get the guys who know what they're doing assigned to that project. During construction, I think I spent... 100% of my time was only construction management at that time. So the more time you spend there and make sure that things are happening
right.
the way they are supposed to happen, the better you're going to be after. And the proof is in the...
Yeah. I still wake up every once in a while in a cold sweat thinking, Doran's calling me about anchor bolts.
Well, those are the little snags
right,
on every project that you
totally.
Have to work with. But at the end of the day, it was a successful project. And is driving a lot of savings for us.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, you know, it begs the question, what's next? I mean, what's the next big project for you? Particularly, maybe before even that or part of that, like, particularly as you think about, you know, you still have emissions at this site. You still have, so you've helped on the cost side, you've helped on the reliability side. I mean, is there plans from an emissions perspective or other big capital projects?
Well, the word of the day is emission reduction, decarbonization, and
yep.
Get a hold on spendings as far as carbon tax is involved. And I think the entire industry is hurting on that. So we are openly looking to solutions to maximize the efficiency on existing combustion processes that mm-hmm. we have in the plant.
Right, right.
Okay. Getting a better control on emissions, reducing emissions. I think we're still far away from capturing and sequestration.
You don't use CO2 in your process, do you?
No.
Yeah.
With that, it's probably finding ways to cut back on consumption, being very efficient on whatever is running in the plant right now. So there's not too many big projects because the cost needs to be controlled and just our luck, the COVID, 2 or 3 years COVID period and then the inflation and the recession that we're fighting right now has a huge impact on the spendings an industry like this.
And it's hard, I mean, for industries like yours that are very thermal intensive.
Yes.
The solution is not obvious. Like, there's no silver bullet, right?
No, there's no silver bullet. And the one thing that I'm fighting currently is that everybody comes and knocks on our doors and say, hey, there's funds available for decarbonization, for green hydrogen, blue hydrogen, this. But there's no actual solution, technical solution
right.
to be applied immediately. I understand there's funds, but the technology is not there yet.
Right.
Most of it is an incipient phase in the designing and prototyping this type of technologies. But to have a technology that you can purchase and install in the plant and see an immediate effect, it's going to be a few more years before that happens.
Totally. What this is a little bit off the topic of the, you know, as we kind of wind down on the project itself, but I mean, you've had, you know, from my view, a really good career in the process, but also on the energy side. I know you're big with Association of Energy Engineers. You're a CEM, right?
CEM.
Yeah. I mean, what would you say to somebody listening to this who's maybe on the front half of their career? Not to say that you're on the back half of your career, but you know, what would you say to somebody who's kind of starting their career? You know, from your vantage point, what you've learned, what are some of the, I don't know, skills or mindset or things that, you know, you would give as advice to somebody early in their career?
I guess the most important is to take passion in what you're trying to achieve. Because if you do this by obligation,
eight hours
at work and go home at the no good things are going to come out of that. But if you use those 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours, I'm going home after 8 hours normally, so I don't want anyone to think that I sleep here. But if you take passion and you follow through and you put your heart into that project, you're going to excel. Of course, you need the knowledge and all the technical background and experience. But if you have a target in your career and you know, I want to be on this side and I want to do this type of work, you better start studying about that and get the best you can so you can be the champion of that project on site. So.
Yeah. That's so true. And you know, that passion piece, and like I grew up in the energy industry. I knew I liked the energy industry, and then I went and worked, you know, for OPG, and I realized I like what they do, but I do not like that big company environment, right? So it's there's so many layers to that, and learning early on what you love, to your point, it makes, you know, there are hard days, right? It's so you can work through a lot of that stuff if you like what you do. If you don't, I'm sure it's terrible. Right.
Like you said, a big company compared to smaller companies where the red tape is non-existent and you can take your project, your thinking to your boss and you can get approval within days, not to say within minutes, that for something that makes sense, makes a huge difference, and that increases your willingness to be passionate about what you're doing. Because if you follow the red tape in big companies, I heard so many stories like the one you said, and they always knock down and say, no, we're not doing this, no. So after a while, you kind of lose the interest in being successful in that company.
I'll never forget early on when I was coming here, you mentioned to me, you know, Matt, as you drive by the office, look for this particular vehicle. And if that's there, the owner's there, right? And you know, I knew you guys were presenting to him frequently, and this project was either going to happen or it was going to be clear it wasn't happening.
Yes.
Like there was no being stuck in purgatory. You know, like it was going to be either this is going to happen, or it's not going to happen for these three reasons. But it wasn't going to be somewhere in between, right?
But also, this is because of what I said before: the work that you put in the front end, and you do your homework diligently, and you present the owner of the decision factors in your company, the project with all the paybacks and all that, it's going to be an easy approval process.
Right,
if that lacks confidence, or you're not going to get the project approved.
Totally. As we kind of finish up, Doran, anything else that we didn't cover that you were hoping that we'd cover, or anything about the project, or, you know, kind of energy projects in general that we didn't talk about?
I wanted to mention quickly, when I mentioned the long-term maintenance agreement for the gas turbine, another very important process in there was to secure critical parts for the equipment. Because there's thousands of parts in this whole plant. So delivery, they're all included in the long-term maintenance agreement.
Right.
But when it comes to delivery, and this is before COVID, before the supply logistics issue, there was items with 17, 18, 20 weeks delivery. So if you had a breakdown and they say, we'll pay for the part, but it's 20 weeks delivery, so what do you do? So that was another project that I pushed hard to get it done, and working with Solar Turbines, and they had really good specialists in this field of
And how did you come to determine, like, you could have bought everything, right?
Yes, but that would have been a hefty
hefty like price. How did you determine what you needed to buy?
We mostly relied on recommendations from the manufacturer, from Solar Turbines. They had the spare parts classified in three tiers.
Okay.
Absolutely needed, short delivery and long delivery with. So we divided that plan on 3 years and budgeted accordingly.
Oh, okay.
So we bought all the critical parts in 3 years, and now they're sitting on the shelf, and every time they come and they need something, they take it off the shelf and they order the part to put it back on our shelves. But that is part of why the cogen was performing so well,
because
we had very short outages of lack of parts. Nowadays it would be even harder with all the supply logistics issues that we have. On a different type of equipment, we got 72 weeks deliveries quoted, so it's just it's just crazy.
That's wild.
So planning and budgeting is very important.
No, I appreciate you sharing that. And that's really why, you know, I want to do this podcast, so that people can listen to folks like you who've been through this and who've been successful and have you know, done some really good things, and you know, I hate for them to miss out on, you know, that on their project, right? So, this is really good. Thank you, sir, for, I know you're busy with this plant and lots on the go, but thank you for carving out some time to be on the Energy Radio podcast. Never boring, always fun with you. So thank you very much for being on the
thank
podcast.
Thank you, Matt, it's been my pleasure. Okay. Thank you for coming. Yeah,
yeah,
thank
good, you. Good. Thank you. And to our listeners, anytime. As always, thank you for tuning in. And this has been a great conversation with Doran Marion of the International Group, energy champion extraordinaire, and now podcast veteran. So thank you for listening. And until next time, stay safe in what you do. And let's focus on making the world a better and a more functional place.